Hello and welcome to this week's TES podcast. I'm Dave Speck and joining me is John Roberts. John, hello.
Hi there, hello.
And we've also got Will Stewart. Will, hi.
Hello.
And Amy Gibbons. Amy.
Hello.
And Mary Louise Clues. Mary Louise, hello.
Hi there.
Now, yesterday the DfE has issued detailed guidance on how schools will return in September. It's a big document, as you would expect, because it's a big job for schools to go back. And in fact, the Head Teachers Union has described it as mind-boggling, the logistics in keeping apart many different bubbles of children in full schools. Another union has said the DfE is living in a fantasy world if it thinks that teachers can stay 2 metres in front of a class all the time. Just to begin with, we were just going to pick out some of the stories from the guidance that we found yesterday. John, I read one of yours about the funding, that there isn't actually going to be any extra funding for the schools to implement this guidance, is there?
No, one in, tucked away in the guidance is a line that basically says that any costs associated with changes that they'll have to make should be met within existing resources, and that there are no plans to provide extra funding for the extra costs. That's landed quite badly, obviously, because school leaders have said that there's bound to be extra costs as a result of this. Additional cleaning and creating hand-washing stations alone, extra staffing associated with cleaning, catering, transport, potentially having to sort of create and design signage and looking at the kind of actual physical logistics of your school. Jeff Barton, the General Secretary of ASCOL, basically said that schools are definitely going to face significant costs and that those shouldn't be met from schools. And I suppose particularly at a time when, as we've talked about pre-COVID, school budgets are tight. So I think it'll be a worry when they're looking at trying to meet the kind of very big ambitions that the government has for a national return, that they're being left to kind of resource it themselves from a very, very, very small pot of money.
What are the things they think are going to cost them money?
There was several different things, but quite a lot fall into staffing. So they said there's going to be the way schools are going to be cleaned will be completely different. That's bound to involve extra cleaning costs. Catering, if lunch times have to be staggered over a period of time, could increase the number of hours that catering staff are needed. There's transport logistics and whether that has any cost associated with it. And redesigning the school. Now, I don't think anyone's expecting major capital works as a result of this, but I think some schools will have to think about how corridors work, whether they need signage, whether they need a one-way system. There's all aspects of this that are either physical work or man hours that will need people.
I mean, you can see caretakers having to build partitions, can't you? And classrooms looking more like isolation booths in some cases, which, you know, these sort of partitions between desks and even corridors and that sort of thing.
And then there's kind of a knock-on effect as well. So one of the things I also spoke to Stephen Tierney, who's the chair of the Head Teachers Roundtable think tank group, and he was saying, you know, it's not unreasonable to consider whether there'll be higher staff absence over the next term through illness, possibly through the virus spreading, and that comes with supply costs and extra staffing costs. Yeah. And he also said there might be occupational health consequences for staff working in what is undoubtedly going to be a stressful environment, and that could come at a cost as well. But I think it's probably as well the broader point that I think there's something about this that ties in with the general theme of the document, which is almost like these are our ambitions, now you turn it into a reality. Do you know what I mean?
Make it work, yeah.
And the ambitions are, as you referred to, like one school leader said, mind-boggling. And it's all well and good starting with the idea that education is compulsory and we need everyone back. But it's a long way from there to actually making it happen and happen safely. And I feel like the school leaders I spoke to yesterday feel like the fact that they're expecting to finance it as well as come up with it in their own schools means it feels like there's a big burden on school leaders to make a national ambition work.
Yeah.
There was something that the DfE, I'm just trying to find it now, but in the actual story where he talks about Jeff Barton saying it was going to be mind-boggling, there's an interesting bit in the document that I'm not going to find in time. But there was an admission from the DfE in seemingly fairly, I'm going to say realistic language, but that you know, even they're setting this out. I'm probably going to have to come back to it. But yeah, there's no doubt, it seems, from either side that it's going to be tough. Dave, I was going to ask you one thing. This isn't going to amount to partitions between people's desks, is it?
That's just me. Maybe I should qualify that. That's just my kind of imagination, having been a teacher and, knowing what classrooms are like. I mean, and I know somebody tweeted a while ago, a head teacher in Leeds said that, now more than ever, we need isolation booths. And he was joking, of course, because he's actually an Lose the Booths campaigner. But yeah. I mean, it's that sort of attitude that you will need partitions in some shape or form. So, qualify.
I think the main thing's bubbles, isn't it? It's people's can mix within their bubbles, but the bubbles are ever expanding.
Mm. That's interesting as well, isn't it? Because teachers are allowed to. It's a real movement from what's currently allowed, is that teachers can move between different bubbles, can't they? And they've obviously done this because it would be impossible, I imagine, for secondary schools to operate unless teachers can move between different groups. But that's quite a change, isn't it, from current guidance?
Yeah, bear in mind there, Mary. Yeah, I was just going to mention we did another story on that as well. The idea that schools can move their teachers between bubble groups. Which could be as big as a whole year group. So in theory, teachers moving between year groups. And they say this is in order to deliver a full timetable. So they're really trying to keep that rounded curriculum going as much as possible. But obviously that will raise some concerns among teachers about how safe it is for them to be mixing with different year groups while the pupils kind of stay within those boundaries. So when we published this, I seem to remember there was some comments on social media sort of suggesting that was a concern to them.
Yeah.
I've got this image of teachers like surgeons sort of going in, kind of washing their hands and going to different classrooms, like scrubbing down, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a challenge, isn't it?
Because the whole concept of bubbles has just changed massively, hasn't it? Because it started off with groups of 15 pupils and now it's expanding to potentially a whole year group in secondary schools, which can be, 200 to 300 pupils.
How are you going to manage a year group bubble?
And are they going to have sections of the playground as well that they can, the different bubbles can go in and not go out of the chalked area? Or what? I mean, how's that going to work?
And then within that, if you're a teacher who moves between different bubbles, then that means that, who knows, in a week or a day, you're going to be, you potentially in the biggest schools, you could be going round and mixing with
a large part of the school,
a thousand pupils, if each bubble's 200 to 300. So
I'll tell you what caught my ear. It was a story you did about the extremely vulnerable teachers, or teachers that are living with vulnerable relatives, are now being told to return in September.
These are the shielding teachers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think this might have been our colleague Catherine's story, that's all right.
It was Catherine. So, yeah, sorry, it was Catherine. Yeah.
Yeah, I had previously done one that some weeks ago that talked about that, but I've brought it up so we can kind of talk about it a little bit. So yeah, the idea is that teachers, extremely clinically vulnerable teachers, and other staff. Will be allowed to return to school sort of underneath the new guidance. I think from what I remember, there is, it does say obviously it's at the school's discretion. I think there, it's not necessarily an expectation that they all have to, because that would be extremely controversial.
No, I think it is an expectation that they have to, because the risk to staff will be mitigated significantly. They're the words that the DfE...
So I think the bit I was remembering is that it says school leaders should be flexible in how those members of staff are deployed to enable them to work remotely where possible or in roles in school where it's possible. So I'm thinking of that, but the idea that they might encourage them to work from home if that's going to be...
It's quite carefully worded, isn't it? It's certainly not saying to schools that they must bring in staff, if they're extremely clinically vulnerable. But it also seems to be saying at the same time that being in that category is not a reason for not coming into school. So I imagine, and most schools you would hope are going to reach some kind of sensible agreement, but the clear, you know, even if it's not stating explicitly, the clear push is basically saying, whoever you are, you need to be back in school. But it's all left up to school, isn't it, really? That's as it is within all of this.
Yeah. So we're going to put quite a lot of pressure on individual working relationships, I imagine, in some cases. I know, speaking to the wider editorial team on TES earlier, we were talking about, they were saying that there's a few teachers who are pregnant have got in touch and said, I wasn't expecting to have to go back into school, and I'm really worried about it, because they've been part of that clinically vulnerable group in the past. So it's going to be some quite anxious conversations going on around that, I would have thought, the next couple of months.
Quite a frightening prospect for some people.
And I'll tell you one story you definitely did, Amy, was this thing about choirs being banned. And
I did, yes.
Woodwind instruments being banned as well. Is that right?
That's exactly right, yeah. So school choirs to be banned and large assemblies avoided when kids return in the autumn. Because the DfE says there's an additional risk of infection in environments where people are, they say, singing, chanting, playing wind or brass instruments or shouting. And so things like big ensembles are a big no-no, because potentially the spread would be much worse. Also, as part of this guidance where it talks about playing instruments, it says, DfE recommends music lessons take place outside, which I think could be an interesting distraction for some of the people in the school. And pupils are positioned back to back or side to side when they're playing as well. So obviously big concern about how these instruments could affect the transmission. And then it also says, kind of looking at assemblies more generally, schools should avoid large gatherings such as assemblies or collective worship with more than one group. But bear in mind, more than one group could mean a lot of different things, because in some schools we're talking about classes, and in some schools, secondary schools more likely, we could be talking about year groups. So actually, in theory, it sounds like you could have a year group assembly, which many schools might do at the moment. But it will be up to schools, I think, to interpret the guidance, and even that wording itself is slightly confusing. I'm not sure if that more than one group is referring to assemblies or collective worship or both. So it's there's a lot to be left to be
That's another kind of running theme, isn't it? There's no, and I guess you can understand why, although people might be a bit suspicious, but it's not definite rules, is it? It literally is guidance, and it's pushing you in a direction. But if, you know, if things did go a bit wrong, then they will be able to turn around and say, well, you know, it was flexible. You can do. I don't know. I was just thinking about another aspect, which is the testing and whether schools should close down after there was an outbreak. And, you know, the phrasing is schools shouldn't usually close. So again, it's not saying you shouldn't. You definitely shouldn't. But it's all quite caveated. So
That's true.
Well, we've put out a summary on our website.
Labour of love from you, Dave.
Well, it was. It took me the best part of yesterday. I cut and pasted it all into Word. It came out at 35 pages.
Oh, my God.
And I tried to get it down to about 2,000 words, but it came out about 3,000 in the end. So, well, that was a joy. And hopefully it will help teachers, because, you know, you haven't got time to read 35 pages, but you might have time to sift through maybe, you know,
golden words.
A couple of thousand. You know,
well, it's better than what the other prospect is, which is that enormous amount of guidance that they've got to go through, and especially as things have been updated in previous weeks, it kind of in other regards. So I think they will find it useful, definitely.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. But moving on, and a big story that we reported on Monday. In fact, a lot of media outlets reported it was this school buildings fund of $1 billion. Which the Prime Minister described as a major new investment to ensure schools are fit for the future. Now, we've done two stories subsequently this week, which might suggest that this story might not be as good as it looks. And in fact, since Monday, we've reported that the DfE's capital budget has actually been cut twice very recently. In fact, which would suggest that there might not actually be as much money for school buildings as as is being suggested. Now, the DfE has taken issue with that, with those stories that we reported since Monday. Will, do you want to just talk briefly about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, let's take it one step at a time. So if we talk about our story, Amy, you wrote this story. So if you explain what the issue was in terms of the budget being cut.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so we know that this capital budget has been cut twice fairly recently. Once towards the end of last year, which was £500 million pounds worth, and then again at the beginning of this financial year by a further £130 million. And the other thing that we established, so not only is the capital budget being cut, but when we look at this £1 billion that's been promised as a major new investment quote from the DfE, first of all, it's not going to materialise until at least 2021-22, so that's next year. And it was originally kind of implied, you know, it's the 2020-21 year that we're looking at, you know, big investments. So that's slightly confusing. And then even so, it looks to be spread out over a number of future years, an unspecified number of future years, and could actually, according to the DfE, what they told us prior to this going out, come out of future capital budgets or in some way, you know, be linked to them. So it's not necessarily a new investment. And I think it's another one of these incidents where it's a lovely round figure, £1 billion. We've had two lots of £1 billion announcements, hugely headline grabbing. But when you actually dig into it, it becomes clear that maybe that's not all it seems. And
of course, we were just reporting the facts as we found them. But the DfE have taken issue with that, Will, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think because we have come under some scrutiny over this, so we should be absolutely clear. We're not saying it's not. There's no question that it won't be new investment when it materialises. But the question is when, and whether it's a big kind of injection or whether it's just a fraction of the kind of capital budget you would have in future years anyway. But yeah, so we published our story, which was based entirely on answers to questions that we got from the DfE about this. I think we spotted that there had been, we'd already done the earlier cut a few months ago, and then we spotted when we were looking into this that the money seemed to have dropped again. So we asked, could that be right? And originally we were told, oh no, it's just a typo. It's just, but it turned out not to be. So we had all of this, and then having published the story, there was a blog published by the DfE, which basically accused us of inaccuracies. So I mean, I don't think there's any point in rehearsing the whole thing there. If people want to see, they can go onto the TS Twitter feed, my Twitter feed, and you can see our response to that. But in short, we stand by our story, and it was based on what the DfE told us.
If you follow through on Will's Twitter thread that he did, at the bottom there are some points that the DfE sent to us. You can actually look at the wording that they use and see that that's all we reported. So yeah, it's worth having a look if you've got any questions about it.
Yeah, I think the heart of it is that the original press release clearly implied that this was money for the financial year 2020/2021, but in actual fact the money isn't going to kick in until the next year, and then it's spread over several years. Yeah. So what originally looks like one billion extra now, actually it might be, you know, I don't know, 200,000 or whatever, we don't know, that's the point. There's been no commitment. So yeah, it's a good announcement, but whether schools are going to see any money extra than they might have had anyway is definitely open to question.
Yeah. Right. Well, look, I'm tempted to sort of wrap it up there because I think we've probably rambled on enough for 1 week. But is there anything we can end on?
Do you want to kind of remind teachers that they might have to be adding checking with their boss on their holiday plans for the summer to their list before the end of term?
So teachers who are planning to jet off to far-flung places, are going to be having discussions with the head teachers in case they have to quarantine when they return, and that might impact on their timetabling for September. So
But I think there's a list today, isn't there, of places?
I think there's 50 countries where if you're returning from those countries, you will not have to quarantine. So I think it's pretty safe to say that teachers are possibly not going to be quarantined. I mean, I know this morning it was France, Spain, Italy, and one other, I think, which obviously very popular.
There's a traffic light system, I think, and as ever, it's unclear. It's clear what the green you can freely travel between the green countries, and obviously not the red countries. So on the green countries is Spain, and on the red is the US, for example. But there's a group in the amber list, which isn't really clear what the restrictions are. So yeah.
That's something else. Just because potential for a nice break. You've now got to think, okay, I've got to sit down with the head now and have a chat about whether I can actually go.
And he or she's probably going to, and the head will probably try to talk that teacher out of it. If it is one of these countries, you would imagine. But I mean, forget holidays. I think a lot of things on teachers' minds this weekend will be that going to the pub tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon.
From 6 in the morning, isn't it? That they're open.
Is it? Gosh, an early start.
Anyway.
Anyway, cheers.
Cheers.